This is the Cap and Haw Show from CSN Chicago and streaming on WGN Plus.
Podsednik hits one to deep right center field. Back at the wall. This ball is gone. Podsednik goes deep. His second home run of the postseason. And the White Sox win it 7-6.
The music takes you back, October 23rd, 2005, Game 2, Astros, White Sox. Scotty Pods at the plate, and you heard what happened. Home run, walk-off, 7-6. Sox win Game 2, sweep the series, World Series champions. 10 years later, here we are celebrating that World Series championship. It's been, seems like a long time ago, and yet seems like yesterday.
Far be it for me to criticize phenomenal announcers, but that call was way too down the middle.
It was down the middle, wasn't it?
Too down. It's all, come on. It's a walk off in Game 2 of the World Series. Go.
Anybody who was there can attest to just how exciting it was. And the guy who created the moment, Scott Podsednik, joins us now on Cap and Haw, CSN Chicago, and WGNplus.com. Good morning, Scott. How are you?
Morning. I'm doing great. I think both of those guys, Joe Buck and Tim McCarver, were both in awe that that home run came off of my bat. They didn't know how to react.
Well, you can understand that, right, Scott? Because you did not hit a home run in the regular season. You end up with two in the postseason, and you were the last guy probably anybody would have anticipated going deep with the game on the line and having a walk-off home run in those circumstances.
Absolutely. And I can go back to my So when I was walking up to the plate, my thought process was just try to reach base. I was 0 for 4 going into that at bat. So Brad Lidge was relatively slow to the plate. My thought was to try to reach first any way I can and then steal second. That was my plan. But, I got a fastball there in a 2-1 count and didn't miss it.
Well, and that's the thing, Joe Buck. Who would have thought it? Scotty Pods. I mean, that's what he could have gone with. I mean, he was right. It was sitting right there for him. Do you still sing Don't Stop Believing whenever you hear it? Do you break into tears, anything like that?
Well, I'm going to tell you, it never gets old. And just hearing that song just a second ago and hearing the call still gives me goosebumps, man. It never gets old. And every time I do hear that Journey song, I get just a little bit of a chill that shoots up my spine, without a doubt.
You know, Scott, you're coming back to town this weekend. The White Sox are having the reunion, the Royal Series, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Sal, doubleheader on Friday, then the game on Saturday and Sunday. It's going to be a great time to see a lot of old teammates. What are you looking forward to the most this weekend?
Well, a number of things. First, just getting back to the city. That was my first, there in 05 was the first extended amount of time I spent in Chicago. My wife and I love it there. So first and foremost, just getting back to the city. Second, seeing all the guys that I haven't seen in a while. I've always said this before, you create a pretty special bond with a group of guys that you grind to a World Series and end up winning one with. So it's going to be fun to see some of those guys again, see you guys talk about it, reminisce about it, and relive it once again.
If you had to give an MVP for that team looking back, who would you give it to?
Well, that's a good question. You guys can figure that one out. I will say this. I think everyone on that club understood their role and knew what they had to do and what they brought to the table to make that team what it was. We everybody stayed within themselves. They did their job. And I think that's why we were good and accomplished what we were able to accomplish. Everyone knew what they were supposed to do that given day. We caught our breaks throughout the playoffs. We took advantage of them, but there were big guys stepping up all throughout the season. Carl Everett getting a hit here, Jermaine here, Paulie popping one here. So, collectively as a group, we all played well together.
Joined by Scott Podsednik, one of the stars from the 2005 World Champion White Sox, going to be in town this weekend for a reunion. So, Scott, before you came to the White Sox in 2004, you led the National League in stolen bases. And then you had the All-Star season in 2005. And I think that it's fair to say that was probably the best year of your career. You played with six other teams. And I just wonder, when you look back and reflect on your career and you reflect on playing for Ozzie Guillen, a guy who is still baseball royalty in this town, what made that experience unique?
Well, I had switched teams quite a few times in the minor leagues, so going from one team to another wasn't that big of a deal at that time. There in 05 was just my third year in the big leagues. I felt like I was still trying to learn how to be a professional, figure out my identity as a player, exactly what I could do to help teams win. So to be in that position, first and foremost, I was fortunate and lucky. You know, I go from last place with the Brewers there in 04 to first and winning it all in 05. So it all happened so fast, and I consider myself fortunate just to be in that position. Going back, I think that I was playing my best baseball right around 04, 05. I had probably my two worst years in 06 and 07. I suffered my second and third sport hernia operations. I just wasn't playing or doing the things I was capable of doing on the ball field. I get a chance to come back in 09 and play well again. But when I look back on my career, you know, that 05 season was the highlight for me, being an all-star, winning a World Series, all the things that go along with it, doing Oprah a couple of times, doing the skit on Saturday Night Live. I mean, it was almost surreal there for an extended period of time.
I think people may forget that in September, you guys were nosediving, and I think the lead got down to a game and a half, and maybe Ozzie took some of the pressure off you guys, and somehow, whatever it was, against the Red Sox, you caught fire, and then there was no stopping you from there. How much credit does Ozzie get for the way he handled when things were going south, for kind of steering that ship back in the right direction?
Well, he deserves a lot of credit. He was the guy at the helm, and he was doing what he felt he needed to do to bring the best out of us. Ozzie was a little bit different sometimes about the way he went about it, but with the personalities that we had on the club, Ozzie's personality, it just worked. It worked for us. And that, I think that's the challenge of a GM, is bringing a group of people together, manager included, that are going to work well with one another. And the specific personalities we had just worked with the way Ozzie was going about his business up there at the top.
Joined by Scott Pacedic here on Cap and Hall on CSN Chicago and WGNplus.com. So what are you doing these days, Scott? And how close in contact do you keep with members of that 2005 White Sox team?
There are a few guys I still keep in touch with. Burley's still playing, so you know, we exchange texts every now and then. I exchange texts with Rowan occasionally, Creedy every now and then. So, like I mentioned earlier, you create a pretty unique relationship with the guys you go to the dance with. So, I'm looking forward to seeing some of those guys back here in the weekend and reminiscing a little bit.
You know, the White Sox use Vince Coleman, former base dealer extraordinaire, as a base running coach, and a lot of guys you see who were as skilled at one facet of the game as much as you were. The art of base stealing was something that you did exceptionally well, Scott. I think that, you know, when the numbers speak for themselves. Have you ever given a thought to getting back in the game in some way as a coach or in any capacity?
I have. I'm still kind of in the process of trying to figure that out. I have a 6-year-old and a 5-year-old now that I stay pretty busy with. So I'm trying to find the right spot and balance the time that I want to be away and that I'm going to, you know, have to give to doing something. With all that being said, I feel like I have some things to offer. I feel like I could help some guys in those regards. It's just going to be kind of a trick of figuring out how much responsibility I want, how much I want to be away from home. And things of that sort. But yes, I have definitely thought about it, continue to think about it, and going to continue to try and figure something out. Baseball is all I know. You know, I spent my entire professional life in the game. I played professionally for 19 years, so I feel like I can help some guys. I just got to find my niche.
Another one of your former teammates who's still doing it, AJ Pierzynski, 38 years old. He just had a 10-for-13 stretch too. Scott, did you like AJ? Did people like AJ? What was the true story? What was going on with AJ in that clubhouse?
You know what? I had a lot. AJ has this reputation of, you know, everyone you talk to is going to have a different comment about AJ. But I'll tell you this: I have respect for the guy. Not only what he's what he's doing now. I mean, to catch his entire career and to still be doing it at 38 is very impressive. And it tells or shows his dedication, how hard he works, and his passion for the game. I respect the way he went about his business. There was some controversy every now and then that followed AJ. He seemed like he was always in the middle of something. But the guy prepared. The guy came to work each and every day. He played big in big ball games. He was a guy that you wanted at the plate with the game on the line. So with all that being said, you can't help but respect a guy like that. Did he go about it different ways? Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, and you don't have to like the guy. Some people don't. But, you know, having the respect for a guy like that who's going to show up and give you his best day in and day out, it's impressive.
Scott, I can remember the morning after game two, and so you guys were headed to Houston after that, and as in my role at the Tribune at the time, I went to West Texas. I went to your hometown, and it just so happened we had planned the trip beforehand. You hit the game winner, and I show up in West Texas, and everybody in that small town wanted to talk about Scott Podsednik. And I went to, I think it was a bar where your uncle was involved with, or as where people gathered.
Was it Wolf's? I don't mean to cut you off. Was it Wolf's Bar? I think it was.
Yeah. Is it still there?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, you know where I'm getting at, because there was such a pride, and the people were so proud of the Scott Podsednik from this small town of West Texas. And I think that when you reflect back, you see 19 seasons in Major League Baseball or professional baseball, it just doesn't happen that often. How much pride do you take being a guy who had a big career in the majors from such a small town?
Well, it's special, and those, you know, I grinded 9 long years in the minor leagues before I, you know, I broke into the big leagues there in 2003 for good with the Brewers. But those guys have been behind me from day one. They've supported me all throughout my career. They played a big role in getting me that All-Star bid there in 05. You know, I know those guys were on the computers doing their work and supporting me in those regards. So it's neat to go back and revisit the city. My mom and dad still live there, so you know, the family goes down there quite a bit. But I recognize their support, what they did over the years, following me and rooting me on, no doubt.
We had Don Cooper on last week, Scott, and he relayed a story about Mark Burley in Game 3 was having a couple beverages, a couple beers, and then they ended up going to him and saying, hey, can you get out there and help us out? And apparently he had drank somewhere, you know, not more than one. Is that true? Can you confirm that? I mean, you were playing, but maybe you noticed.
Well, I can confirm that. I remember, it was in Houston. Yeah, right, in Houston. Yeah. I remember Burley running. See, I was in left field, and he was running in from the bullpen to the mound. I can't recall what he said. He made some comment to me, but he had a big smile on his face, and he was ready to go. So I'm thinking maybe a few of those pops his fear of failure wasn't there. I think he was jetting on all cylinders.
And Jeff Love made it worthwhile for him to come into the game and save it. That was a magical night. It was a magical season, and I'm sure that you're going to enjoy reliving all the magic this weekend in Chicago. Scott, thank you for joining us, and enjoy yourself reminiscing on the South Side this weekend.
Thanks for having me, guys. We'll see you guys this weekend.
We'll see you on Friday. Take care. Scott Podsednik, one of the stars from the 2005 Chicago White Sox. And the world championship team going to be celebrated on Friday. Scotty Pods was one of those guys that when you think of that team, you think of that guy, because he was one of those just magical catalysts that made everything else go. And it was the best year of his career. And he was the kind of thing that has to happen for a World Series team to celebrate. You have to have guys like Scott Podsednik peak at the right time.
It wasn't a popular trade. They sent Carlos Lee out.
That's right.
You know, it wasn't.
That's right.
It was not well received.
Kenny Williams was shaking up the chemistry, was making some changes that were bold, considered bold, and yeah, there's a lot of pressure on Podsednik. And I think he was one of those guys we talk about. He sounds really relaxed now. Sounds very happy with life. He's got two kids. He's transitioning to life after baseball. Scotty Podsednik was an intense guy.
Yeah.
Scotty Podsednik was a guy that was a little tightly wound when he played. But you need those kind of guys. It gave them the chemistry, and certainly looking forward to seeing him this weekend.
Love the prototypical leadoff hitter, and he was most definitely that year. CSN Chicago is re-airing all 16 of the Chicago Blackhawks Stanley Cup wins today. You can relive the Minnesota series starting at 1:30 with Game 1. David Haugh, you're fired up. Look at that. He's going to be right there, 1:30, Game 1. You can visit csnchicago.com for complete listings for all of them. Tomorrow, the Chicago Fire are back on CSN. They take on the Columbus Crew. CSN Plus will have the game in Spanish
as well.
There you go. Coverage starts tomorrow. That is at 7. Sports Talk Live tonight, 5:30. And Sportsnet Central tonight at 6:30. So always a lot going on Comcast Sportsnet, CSNChicago.com.
630 text said, hey, did Cap go to Italy to avoid the 10-year Sox World Series celebration? Maybe so. There are no accidents. Look, he knew about this. This schedule was out a long time ago, well before I think he booked for his Italian tour.
Certainly an added bonus for him at the very least.
I don't know about that. But we can believe it's true. That was fun talking to Scotty Potts.
It really was.
Takes you back to 2005. Okay, Mark Cartman in for the Cap Man. David Haugh, Cap and Haugh, CSN Chicago and WGNplus.com. Still have David Bass coming in studio in about 10 minutes. We'll be back right after this.
It's the Cap and Haugh Show on WGN Plus and Comcast Sportsnet.
Cap and Haugh, Mark Cartman in for the Cap Man, CSN Chicago and WGNplus.com. Scotty Podsednik kind of made me think of the guy, with due respect to him, but he acknowledged it. He didn't have a better season than 2005. There's somebody on every championship team, at least one person, that has that year, that peaks, that when he looks back at his career, it doesn't get any better. That maybe because of the championship, but they're related. You know, his peaking had a lot to do with the Sox winning the title. The Sox winning the title made that the best year of his career. Every team, like when you think back to Chicago sports championship years, and there aren't very many of them. I guess when you talk about maybe even division titles, pennants, whatever, the 84 Cubs, the 89 Cubs, the 2006 Bears, you know, the Bulls, you know, a lot of it was Jordan and Pippen. But who were the role players, the complimentary guys who had to have that kind of year, and it never really got better than that?
You know,
who comes to mind?
When you made the Bulls reference, it made me think in 97, now they probably would have won it without him, but he contributed and he helped, and he never did anything like that in his career, no longer with us. Brian Williams, Bison Dele, was a guy that...
Somebody like that.
Yeah, I mean, that guy came out of nowhere,
right,
and he was helping him in a big-time way. And even like if you go further back, by far the highlight of his career, Bobby Hanson hitting a corner three in Game 6 against the Blazers. Like, he'll never, if he thinks about one thing in his NBA career, it's that moment.
When Scott Podsednik he's interviewed today because he hit the home run in Game 2 that gave the Sox a walk-off victory. That's immortality. That's sports immortality. He's always going to be that guy. There's a seat, you know, reserved in his honor. There's going to be a niche in Sox history that he carved for himself. Bobby Hanson's a good example. Mike Brown for the Bears to a much lesser degree, but did his career ever get better than it did in 2001?
No, probably
not. And those plays? You know,
you loved them.
And they were quirky, and they led to a special season.
Yeah,
the Cubs in '84.
Sutcliffe, 16-1. Best season by far of his career.
He had some success beyond that, but he was a Cy Young guy. Who were the other guys on that team that, you know, never got better? Jerome Walton peaked as a rookie.
89 for Walton, yeah.
Yeah, 89 for
and
Walton.
84, Steve Trout. Guy was legit two-starter in 84. 89, you had Walton and Dwight Smith. Boys, Don Zimmer peaked as a manager in 89.
How about and I hesitate to bring them up, the 85 Bears? Who on that team really, it never got better than it did that year?
Well, for all the storylines and everything else, Jim McMahon. That was his peak in his career by far.
You know, that's a really good point.
I mean,
that was his year. That was his Podsednik year. And it's almost like the Podsednik year. You know, what year, what athlete you know, peaked on a championship team, or that was his moment, and never got better than that. Never got better than that for Jim McMahon.
No, his popularity. He was a better quarterback probably in even before 85. At least he had more zip on it. His arm was already starting to go a little bit. He could sling it when he came out of BYU, and then hit after hit, and then all of a sudden he couldn't throw it at all.
When you think back to 2005, I know you're a Cubs fan, but when you think back to 2005, that team.
Misery. Yeah, go ahead.
Is it misery? Is it a miserable memory?
For me.
Because all your friends rubbed it in, all your Sox friends?
Well, I just knew that the Sox would have the trump card for.
There was a lot of envy?
The enormous amount
What'd
of envy.
What'd you do during the parade?
The parade? Barely have any conscious moment. I know that when Juan Uribe threw it across the diamond.
There's another guy.
Yeah.
It never really got any better for Juan Uribe than it did for the 2005 Sox, and he's still in making money on a major league team.
I know I'm supposed to be professional, but the fan hat is on right now. When Juan Uribe picked up the ground ball, fired across to get whatever base runner that was by a step, I screamed as loud as I could scream in my apartment. No! A guy upstairs from me with a baby comes running down, bangs on my door, and he's like, I got a kid asleep. You can't do that. And I'm like, I hear your kid crying all the time. This is one moment. The White Sox won the World Series. It'll never be lived down. You think about for a Cub fan, too. You had 0-3.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
And then.
I know.
Yeah.
All right, we're not going to go down that angst avenue. But I understand what you're saying.
The Red Sox, the White Sox.
6-3-0 has a good one. 84 Cubs. We forgot about 84 Cubs. Bobby Dernier.
That's a great one.
Bobby Dernier had his Podsednik. Actually, Podsednik had his Bobby Dernier year in 2005.
He did.
That's a better way to put it, 21 years later.
Yep.
Because Dernier sort of defined that whole career year. Did it ever get any better for Bobby Dernier after 84?
No chance.
And he doesn't have a ring for that.
No. And the Daily Double, him and Rhino. It really it didn't
Brian get... Bickle. Brian Bickle, somebody texted in. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Bickle had his Stanley Cup playoff to remember, that special run. Even though did he end up being on the 2010 Cup? He petitioned to get on that, right? Because he was part of the team. Maybe he wasn't on the team. We need to check into that. But 2013, he was a big part of why they won when they won.
And he's on the Cup this year, but it's just not even close to the same.
Well, he had vertigo.
Right.
Are you just gonna dismiss that?
I'm not dismissing it. I'm just saying that year was a special, special. It was much better for Bickle in 13. That's all I'm saying.
I like 563 texts in from 2006. Was he around in 2006? I have to check my Bears memory. Nathan Vasher, the interceptor. He was a cornerback with Tillman on that 2006 defense, and the interceptor peaked.
I forgot all about Nathan Vasher.
In 06. One of the nicest guys to cover.
Is that right?
One of the nicest Bears to pass through here in recent memory. Nathan Vasher is a good example.
William Perry's being texted in, too. That's a good one, too.
And Mike makes a good point in my ear. Refrigerator Perry.
Yeah.
As a rookie, he peaked.
You're looking at the fridge, I'm the rookie, maybe large, but I'm no dumb cookie. He definitely peaked in 85. Handoffs and the whole thing.
Is that your ringtone?
I could bust out a lot of Super Bowl shovels. Perry's one of my favorites. This is Steve, and I'm no wonder. I run like lightning.
John Garland? On that 05 team? Yeah, I think so. I think that's a good one. I don't know about Freddie Garcia. Freddie Garcia was very but you know, he was
Ozzie.
Contreras, though. You know, that team had several guys that, again, it was a perfect storm of players kind of peaking at the right time. Contreras, Garcia, and Garland, hard to say it ever got better than it did that season for them.
El Duque.
Bobby Jenks.
Bobby Jenks for sure.
You see him? He was back in town a couple weeks ago. He was in the broadcast booth with Hawk and Stoney.
That team, it's just unbelievable.
That was a fun – I'm sorry you did not enjoy that, but that was a fun team to be around. In my role at the time, I was around the Sox, so I was like writing Enterprise stuff or doing a little bit of everything. I was around the Sox from mid-August on. And that was one of the most fun 6 to 8 week periods that I've had here.
Oh, I believe it.
Because that team was entertaining, they were good, and they were very, compelling. Everybody had something to say. They were winning. They're having fun. It got tense because they started to choke. And you had it all.
Well, from a reporter media perspective, just being around Ozzy was the best. You never knew what you were going to get pregame. You could sit there. He would be talking about life. I had one fun moment where Derek Jeter walks by and he had a whole conversation with him about Jeter being God and how
never knew what you were getting with Ozzy, but you were going to get something you would remember.
He wished his daughters were sleeping with, he said he didn't have, I don't have any daughters, but if I did, I'd want them to sleep with him.
Carm, I'm sure you've blocked this from your memory, but 708 and a couple other texters brings up a good one from the 2003 Cubs.
Oh, the 03 Cubs.
Mark Pryor. Mark Pryor, no doubt about it.
Don't do this.
630, Mike Ditka as a coach in 1985.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, there's a lot of good examples people are offering on the text line. Moises Alou.
He had a great career.
He had a pretty solid overall career. That's the thing. I think you can look at other seasons that may have statistically been better in Alou's career, but I don't know that obviously – you know, he had this, that team was very accomplished. But I don't know that Alou would necessarily fit all the criteria that we're talking about.
I'm sure it's his biggest regret in his career. But when they look back, what was your favorite year playing? I don't know if he'd say
his biggest regret may have been talking about how he gets his hands ready to hold the bat and avoid calluses. That might have been his biggest regret.
Very creative.
It's very creative. But I don't know that I would share that with anybody. Hey, how about 03 Cubs, Randall Simon?
Great acquisition.
Randall Simon. Thank you, 219. That's a great text.
He was famous after. Then he hit one of the sausages when he was in. Was he with Pittsburgh then? When he hit the sausage in Milwaukee with the bat.
708. Dustin Byfuglien from the 2010
for sure.
Hawks. Really?
He was.
Yeah, I guess.
That was his peak.
He did probably peak at that point.
He was phenomenal.
Okay.
And now in Winnipeg, not being noticed, at least back in Chicago, by anyone,
and still being loved and pined for in Chicago. Everybody still wants. Whenever the Hawks have trouble with a power play, it's like if they only had Buff in front of the net, creating traffic.
Back in the day, I used to call him Byfuglien because I was new to hockey. Now I'm an expert.
Did you really? now you're an expert.
Byfuglien. Love Byfuglien.
You called him. You know what?
I learned quickly that his name was Byfuglien, yes. But
I knew that you knew that you'd been around the Hawks for a while when you can spell Byfuglien without looking.
Can you do that right now?
Yeah, I'd have to type it, but yeah, Byuglien.
You forgot the F.
No, I didn't.
You said Byug. Rewind the tape, Jackal.
Okay, yeah, there was an F there. I would be able to type. I could type it reflexively.
Oh, okay.
I goofed. Oh, here's another good one. Do you remember this guy from 2010, Nick Boynton?
I remember him for reasons other than 2010. That's wrong to say. Did he play?
Yes.
He did?
That was 2010. Yeah, he was a late season acquisition from the Arizona Coyotes.
I have no memory.
I did a story on him because I think he was dealing with diabetes. I think he was a diabetic. Yeah, I think so.
Did he have a goal, any key goals in the run?
He was a contributor. What are you making fun of a Nick Boynton for?
I know.
Don't get into
that. No, I'm not going there at all. I'm just saying, like, I barely remember the guy doing anything. Like, bringing up Nick Boynton, it's almost like you're going to bring up Corey Carr.
We brought up Randall Simon. You didn't object to Randall Simon because he was a Cub. You get a little hockey territory, it's unfamiliar ground, and you object.
Well, Randall Simon had a big moment. He beat up the Brewers in the sausage race, and he had some big hits, Randall Simon. He got the base hit off of Maddox in Game 3.
Somebody texted in Johnny Knox, and that's a good that's a good one because the Bears, I think, on that 2000 and that was he on the 2010 team? I think so because I think that that was a playoff game where he got hurt, wasn't it? I have to look that up, but I think Johnny Knox was one of those guys that you know had a singular moment or a singular season that stands out above the rest.
Johnny Knox was a guy that had a lot of confidence in himself. He had a lot of belief.
Yeah, but you know he had a lot of speed.
He did.
And he had a lot of potential that was, you know, unfortunately ran into a really bad injury. And you hope that he's doing okay with his life because he was a guy whose NFL trajectory was altered due to injury. And it's one of those things that was really sad when it happened. But, yeah. Hey, how about somebody? I don't remember what team he was on or what contributing, but I'd just like to say the name. Matt Mertin for certain.
Loved Matt Mertin. Scott Darling 2015 is not a bad one. It might not get better for Scott Darling.
We can't say that yet.
We can't.
We cannot say that yet.
But we might be able to someday.
All right.
I hope it's
so. These are good entries. Ryan Theriault?
It didn't get any
the
better.
Riot?
The Riot won the World Series, though, did he not?
I was going to say, he missed a World Series.
Yeah.
He was like in the next two World Series winners, wasn't he?
Cardinals and Giants, yeah.
I don't think that Ryan Theriault looks back at his Cubs experience and says, oh boy, that's what I'm going to go back to be for a reunion. No way.
But he was an everyday player with the Cubs.
Didn't he say about Starlin Castro, bring him on? I'm ready.
Had a lot of confidence.
How'd that work out for you, Ryan?
The Riot.
See, I can say that because Cap's not here to defend the Riot. That was his guy.
They were tight.
He used to come in and do shows all the time.
It was the Ryan Theriault show.
Ryan Theriault show.
Believe me, I called him up all the time. Hey, Ryan, it's your time. It's your dad. It's your dad. So he loved doing it with Cappy. They were buddies.
Kerry Wood.
89 Cubs, Lloyd McClendon. That, whoever you are, sir, that's hysterical. 2004 Glendon Rush. I'm getting a little too cubby
Glendon
here.
Rush was a good hitting pitcher.
He rushed it up there. He was you like that one?
Rushed it up there.
We had a song, me and my buddies. He rushed it up there. He rushed it up.
Was that when you were a vendor? Did you sing that in the aisles? Peanuts.
Glendon Rush.
Carlos Marmol.
That's a good one. 07 and 08 was the highlight of his career.
But see, you said again those are multiple seasons. He was good over a period of time. I'm trying to look for, and we've gotten a lot of good examples of guys who had that one year. When I think back to my, career, I would think of that one year. And Carlos Marmol, as maligned as he was, had more than one year.
He did. He also, in that one year that we just referenced, he gave up a huge bomb.
When he left town, you were glad, weren't you?
It was time for Carlos to go. I was always impressed with. When Marmol was in his prime, he was in those few years. He was awesome.
He was a good guy to deal with. I respected the fact that he was always a guy that faced up to his failure.
Yeah,
accountability was his thing.
He talked.
Yeah,
he most definitely did. That's true.
How about Bernard Berrien?
That's not bad.
Yeah. Joe Borowski, Pat Gastel with the offering from the peanut gallery. That's a good one.
Yes, how he got there.
Sweaty Joe.
Sweaty Joe from the Mexican League, and all of a sudden he's a prime closer on a 2003 team and got paid, too. Congratulations.
What are you saying there?
I think Joe might have been caught up in the... This is my own guess. I have no proof of anything. Just might have perhaps gotten caught up in the old sign of the times back in the day, which in his case, I get it. You're out of the league. And if you do this, you might have a shot to be in the league and make a bunch of dough. Okay, I understand that choice over Barry Bonds or whoever.
815 wants to open up this can of worms. Hate to say this, but Jay Cutler, 2010?
No.
He's had better years. Jay Cutler peaked in 2008. Then the Bears, traded for a guy that they thought they were getting, 4,500-yard per season guy, sacked 11 times. And we're still waiting for that guy. Yeah, and we're still waiting for that offensive line and those weapons and all those things. Rex Grossman.
I don't know.
Stop it. We're not going down that road.
Don't bail him out with an offensive line.
Stop. I'm not getting into the Jay Cutler conversation. I'm not going to do that.
You do that enough during the football season?
Yes. 312, Rex Grossman.
For sure. Taking a team to the Super Bowl, even though he was hurt and ordered the whole deal, that's for sure the peak of his career.
Well, Rex Grossman, some would say, was a passenger on that team, and some would say he led the team to the Super Bowl because he was a quarterback.
I mean, I'd say he was a passenger, and he still is the highlight of his career.
I think it was the highlight of his career. You know, though, last year he was still collecting an NFL paycheck.
Congratulations. Good for him.
If he came back into Chicago, though, you would want to talk to a Rex Grossman.
Sure, absolutely. Josh McCown being written in.
Real quick, let's go to John in Brookfield who has a suggestion. Good morning, John.
Hey, what's going on, Dave? How about not a year, but a dame or two, maybe Tuffy Rhodes?
Tuffy Rhodes had
a moment.
A day, right? I mean,
I think it was a day.
It was a day. It was opening day.
Yeah.
Hello, how are you? Here are my three home runs. I'm going to disappear, and then I'm going to be known for this forever. And I'm going to go to Japan and be, you know, highly compensated home run hitter in Japan. That's a good one, John. Thanks for the memory. I don't know that Tuffy – the Cubs didn't win anything that year, did they?
No, that was – was that the year they started 0-14?
I think so.
I feel like they were an 0-14. That was – well, 97, that was that.
Carmen Fanzone, 1973.
That was not – no, that was before that.
They didn't win in 73.
No, that was 93, I think, Tuffy Rhodes, I want to say. I think Mike Morgan was starting opening day, just giving up bombs after they let Greg Maddux go to Atlanta. Way to go. That was a good call.
Captain Hall brought to you by Horwitz, Horwitz & Associates, Illinois' top personal injury lawyers. They won for the largest verdict for a brain injury in Illinois history, largest verdict for a back injury in Illinois history, and the largest verdict for a neck injury in Illinois history. That's the triple crown of lawyering. Horwitz, Horwitz & Associates, these guys win. All right, we'll take a break. Come back. David Bass, Bears defensive end, outside linebacker, Mr. Pass Rusher, joins Captain Hall with Mark Carmen in for the Catman on CSN Chicago and WGNplus.com.
You're listening to the Cap and Haw Show.
Cap and Haw, Mark Carmen in for the Cap Man on CSN Chicago and WGNplus.com. Having some fun getting some good entries, questions, names about the player who peaked on the championship team in Chicago sports. A couple guys, Kosuke Fukudome. He was on a good Cubs team and never really got any better than that.
He had a good first half of that season, too, and then it just went straight downhill. Did he even get a hit in the playoffs?
I don't think so. I wonder where he is. Where are they now? He'd be a good one to catch up with.
Kosuke Fukudome.
So I want to get a couple other things before we get out of here because getting David Bass is going to be in here after a quick break. But wanted to make sure we updated people on Johnny Oduya, who is expected to make a decision as soon as today. These things tend to drag out when you expect decisions because there's a lot of teams anticipating his next move. The Sabres are said to be involved. The Stars have some interest. The Blue Jackets have been mentioned, and the Blackhawks. And I think that everybody agrees that and understands Johnny Oduya would be motivated to take maybe perhaps less to stay in Chicago. How much less is another story.
It seems that Oduya really wants to stay here, but also now is realizing that it's just not going to happen. So rather than wait to the very last minute where they just tell him for the millionth time, yes, no, I'd rather, no, I'm sorry, you cannot have this job or whatever, he's going to take the best deal that's out there that makes the most sense for him, which kind of hurts, but...
Well, Trevor Daley, which covers them in the event that Johnny Oduya does leave. And Trevor Daley is the defenseman that comes over from the Stars in the Patrick Sharp trade. And I think when you look at, you know, the types of things that he offers in the right circumstances, then he's 31 years old. He's a 31-year-old defenseman who is, I think he had as many goals last season as Patrick Sharp did. He's an offensive-minded, quick, puck-moving defenseman that the Hawks can use well in their system. A lot of the things that you're hearing about Trevor Daley were the same types of things you heard about Johnny Oduya when they came to the Blackhawks. And now people are lamenting his loss, and I understand that. I guess I'm just saying that you want to be open-minded about Trevor Daley because statistically, I think the metrics showed that he was maybe the NHL's worst defenseman last year.
Yeah, he has some.
It wasn't good.
He has some bad metrics, but that was a bad defensive team. So perhaps he was, just kind of thrown under the bus by being on the last year's Dallas Stars. I think people just have grown attached to Oduya like they have with so many Hawks. How much of a drop-off is it, or is it the same? I wouldn't expect it's all that much.
We'll see, because that's a big I think that when you look at offense and what they lost in Saad and Sharp, you worry. But the Hawks are always, you think, going to be able to find those guys to score.
Who are you reading today that says that they might be a better team?
Well, we're going to talk about this maybe tomorrow in more detail, but Ken Campbell from the Hockey News asks the question rhetorically, could this Hawks team right now be better than the one that won the Cup? And immediately you think, really? Are you serious? Can you really be asking this question? And yet, when you look at the way that he presents it, it's not a crazy idea. I don't know. Well, we want to talk about this more tomorrow, maybe even talk to Ken Campbell from the Hockey News. So we will get to that. But we need to shift gears here shortly. Get the ultimate experience with the all-new Samsung Curved 4K Ultra HD TV at Apt in Glenview With the Samsung 4K Ultra HD, you get the fastest internet and smart TV functions available. Come into app today to see the complete selection of Samsung electronics or call them at 847-544-2228. For complete satisfaction, free delivery, and a better experience, shop apt, pleasing people since 1936. Mark Carman's in for the Capman. David Haw on Cap and Haw, CSN Chicago, and WGNplus.com. We'll come back with David Bass, the Chicago Bears defensive end and outside linebacker.
This is the Cap and Haw Show from CSN Chicago and streaming on WGN Plus.
Yes, that's Chicago Bears music. Wow, 2 weeks away, roughly. And yeah, we'll be here before you know it. July 29th, the Bears report to Bourbon A. David Haw and Mark Carman in for the Cap Man on Cap and Haw on CSN Chicago at WGNplus.com. Pleased to welcome in Bears outside linebacker David Bass. How you doing there? Let me turn your mic on there. That's not you don't have to hit any buttons there. So,
I'm good.
Outside linebacker David Bass, is that taking some getting used to because you were a defensive end. You were brought here as a pass rusher. How different is your job description now under John Fox and Vic Fangio than it was, say, the last couple of years?
Well, more than the last couple of years. I've been playing defensive end 4-3 front my whole life. So, now, you know, I'm still doing what I did as a defensive end. I just get to stand up in the two-point. I get to drop back in coverage. I'm still rushing the passer. I'm still playing the run, you know, from outside leverage, defensive end, outside linebacker standpoint. So it's going to be different from the aspect I get to drop back in coverage. I get to be back.
Have you done that before?
No, first time.
Is that a good thing to ask somebody who's never done that before to do that?
It's a great thing. As long as we get it. That's why I've been working at this offseason, dropping, getting to know coverages, offense, different route schemes, things like that, and my responsibility while I'm back there, because it's a lot of time where we just be in a lot of open space. And as a defensive lineman, if you're not in immediate contact when that ball hiked, then you feel like you're wrong. You're going to lose. So it's a little different, a little more patient being back there, but I think I'm going to get it down.
What's your expectation on how long it will take you to pick everything up and be able to, you know, play natural, I guess?
Quick. In this industry, you don't have a long time. Like you said, we got camp. We report in 2 weeks. I believe we're only out there in Bourbon A for 2 weeks. Then we head to Indy, and we come back to Hallis Hall to finish up the last two games, I want to say, one or two games. So, it got to be a quick transition. I got to get it. I got to make it second nature and look natural out there so I can have a chance at making a 53-man roster.
Chicago United Ventures LLC and the Palacios Foundation is making an effort to silence the violence with their pro player football camp this Friday and Saturday, the 17th and 18th, 10 to 2. Camps taking place at St. Joseph High School in Westchester, Illinois. Campers can expect to learn football drills, fundamentals, teamwork, practicing good sportsmanship, and a positive and safe environment. Camp registration now open, completed by visiting www.bearsfootballcamp2015.eventbrite.com. I know it's important for you to be active in the community. I know True. That's something that you, since you've gotten here a couple years ago, growing up in St. Louis, you're a community-minded guy. I found it very fascinating last year, about a year ago in August, where you were interviewed, I think, by Sports Illustrated on your thoughts on Ferguson and what was going on in St. Louis. You're not a professional athlete that operates in a vacuum. You know, you're aware of the world around you.
True.
How important it is for guys in your position to have a voice when issues like what happened in Ferguson, what happened in Baltimore, when issues that are social issues, that are important things, confront us in society. How important is it for an athlete to speak out?
It's very important. It's huge, mainly because we've been blessed to be in the situation that we are as a professional athlete. So right now, we have a platform that we're able to reach, you know, hundreds, thousands, some people even, you know, millions. And our voice is strong right now. It's not going to be like that way for the rest of our life because we're not going to be an athlete, a professional athlete, or somewhere that, you know, people look up to us and actually value our opinions for our entire lives. So my biggest thing is, why have this platform? I need to maximize it. I need to do everything that I can do to try to make a difference, from making those around me better, helping those out, and getting people, you know, back at home in my situation that really didn't know much about going to college, from small things like picking out of college, going to the NFL, picking out, you know, advisors, agents, things like that, just to help them out. You know, show them that I came from where you came from, and everything is possible. So why have this platform? I'm just trying to maximize it and help those around me.
Some guys, you know, with the platform, maybe even many guys, they, you know, they shy away from it because they're just not comfortable. It's not the way they've been raised. Where does that come from for you?
You know what? And that's, it's funny you say that, because I was just speaking with someone and I was actually just speaking at a camp, and I told the kids that, you know, I'm not a professional speaker. I wasn't paid to speak, you know, and do things like this. But I feel that, you know, it was my calling from God and one of my duties, that something I need to do, even if I'm not comfortable with it, I'm not used to. I figure with practice, just like, you know, me playing outside linebacker, switching from a defensive end, it's going to take practice. And with that, you know, it's going to fall into place. I'm be able to do it. I'm going to be more comfortable in situations like that. So, you know, I might mess up a handful of times, but hopefully it'll get a mess. If I can reach one or two kids, then, you know, that'd be a plus for me.
So you come from Missouri Western State, not a huge school, not on the NFL radar very much. So
D2, trying to put us on the map.
And there's not a lot of guys from your college that ever ended up playing in the NFL.
We got five total and three currently in the NFL now. Greg Zuerlein with the Rams and Michael Hill with the Redskins.
So football's a funny sport. Sports are funny this way. You get drafted by the Raiders, you get cut. But you had such a good game against the Bears that preseason, you stood out in film. You flashed. And then when the opportunity came, the Bears seized it. And you end up in Chicago and you got an opportunity. You had the big play against the Ravens. You make a mark. You make yourself known. How much does that give you confidence and maybe help fill some of those moments of doubt? New coach, new system, new position. You don't know where you stand. You enter in this preseason training camp with a lot of uncertainty. How much does the fact that you've overcome a lot of these long odds before help you now?
It's huge. Right now, like those plays that you said, me getting picked up right after I was released by the Raiders, it shows me that I belong. And in my head, if I have a slight, you know, just the slightest thought that I can hold my own and I can be successful in this league, that's all I need. I can go out there because I know I got my family and friends that count on me, that, you know, support me throughout anything, the ups and the downs. So with them along with me, I know everything else will fall into place. But with anybody, if you make a good play or the coaches give you some kind of, you know, compliment, you take it. You don't want to go crazy with it and get cocky. But at the same time, it's just – them solidifying you that you can hold your own in this league. And it's going to be a lot of ups, a lot of downs. Sometimes more downs than not in this industry. It's never stable, ain't nothing guaranteed. So you're going to have a lot of things that's not going to be happening your way and things not happening when you want it to happen. You're just going to have to stay patient, keep faith, and keep working.
What do you tell yourself about the health of the game? I mean, guys like Chris Borland, they retire at 24, and then you got guys like Chris Conte who's had a lot of concussions, and yet mm-hmm. saying, hey, listen, my life might be not be very long on the back end, but I love playing this game. When you're having that conversation with yourself as far as how long you want to play and the dangers of it, what goes on?
Yeah, and some of those is just unfortunate situations. You never know how long. You really can't put a time and a date on it, but I'm going to just play until, you know, I feel like I can contribute to why I still love the game, where I can wake up and go work out in the offseason every day and then show up, you know, to meetings and practice and be attentive, taking in. I'm still learning. Once it gets to a point where, you know, I'm not focused and I'm just kind of there, I don't want to be a guy that's just showing up to collect checks and be known as stealing money and I'm not really contributing to the team. I want to make sure that I'm valued and I play a huge role on the team.
Checks are nice though, right?
Oh, they're great. Yeah, it's a blessing.
Nice. Yeah.
It's a blessing.
It's the best part, right?
I ain't going to turn them down.
You're not worried about the head stuff at all. You're just in the moment just playing.
Yeah, and that's what you got to do with anything in life. If you think about it, more times than not, you're going to find yourself not being successful. In our game, you're thinking and you're playing too slow. And that's never a good thing to hear from a coach, stop thinking and play. But with myself, I had to go through it. A lot of young guys go through it. And some guys that's older still, you know, constantly go through that thinking too much. And when you're thinking too much, you mess around. That's when you get hurt. That's when you're not making plays, and that's when you find yourself, you know, being released from a team.
Chicago United Ventures, LLC, and Palacios Foundation. They've got the Silence to the Violence Pro Player Football Camp Friday, Saturday, 10 to 2, St. Joseph High School in Westchester, www.bearsfootballcamp2015.eventbrite.com. David Bass, the Bears outside linebacker, kind enough to join us, going to be there. He'll be part of this. thank you for being here. Good luck to you this season. We will see you in, 16 days?
Yeah,
15 days.
Soon. Pretty quick.
July 29th.
Getting after it. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks for being here, David.
No
Mark,
problem.
Thanks for being here.
See you tomorrow.
For the Catman, Cap and Haw, back tomorrow. Talk about the All-Star Game tonight on CSN Chicago and WGNplus.com. Thanks for watching.